Council ready?
Yes.
Please proceed.
May it please the court. Good afternoon. I am William Pepper, Sr., and this afternoon it's my privilege to represent the town of Cheswold and the members of its town council in this litigation arising from the termination of former police chief Robin Vann. This interlocutory appeal presents the court with its first opportunity to construe the provisions of Chapter 93 of Title 11 of the Delaware Code, the police chief's due process statute, in light of the Constitution's due process requirement of a hearing before an impartial, unbiased decision maker. The case begins in March 2005 when the mayor of Cheswold, Peter Diakas, issued a letter to Robin Vann proposing to terminate him for 15 specific reasons. Pursuant to the police chief's due process statute, a hearing was held before the Cheswold Town Council in May 2005. Mayor Diakas, although he's a member of the town council, did not participate on the council as a decision maker. The hearing lasted 4 hours and began with voir dire of the members of council. Chief Vann's council asked members of the town council if they could make a decision contrary to the position taken at the hearing by the mayor and the town manager. The members assured James Liguori that they could and would. Mr. Liguori did not object to any of the council members or request that any of them recuse themselves. On the day following the hearing, the members of the council deliberated and unanimously decided to terminate Robin Vann from his position as police chief. Mr. Vann appealed the town's decision to the Superior Court pursuant to the statute. The court ruled that the council members have a conspicuous base for bias against Vann because of his role in the investigation into the Ryan appointment and the at least superficial interest of the individuals opposed to Vann's position. The court noted that the principal witnesses against Mr. Vann were the mayor and the town manager. The court said that inherently suggested a conflict of interest, or at the very least, the appearance of it, for the town council members impaneled for the hearing. Although the town council would not be affected by Vann's termination, the council, the mayor, the vice mayor, and the town manager would continue to work together after the decision. The town of Cheswold and its officials asked this court to reverse the decision of the Superior Court and hold that Robin Vann's...
Well, there's also the issue about the referral to the Attorney General and the Delaware State Police, right?
That's part of the investigation into the Ryan appointment.
And does the record show what happened to that investigation?
No. It went nowhere. There were no prosecutorial action taken by the Attorney General's office, but that's nowhere to be found in the record.
Did this issue get raised at any time after the hearing, but before the appeal to the Superior Court?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Does the record contain or show in any way which if members of the town council were identified as being biased or potentially biased?
No, I don't believe it does, Your Honor. The town asked the court to hold that Robin...
Can you help me with the referral, just so I understand what the issue is? The allegations pertain to minutes being doctored to show that the town manager was hired by a resolution of the council when that, in fact, did not occur.
My understanding from the record, Your Honor, is that Chief Vann said that the records had been manipulated. Lindale...
He said he was told that, right?
The best I can get from the record, Your Honor, is the fact is presumed in one of Mr. Liguori's questions. Mr. Lindale, who was the secretary of the town council at the time, testified, and that's in the record, I believe, at B 113-114, that he received minutes by email, cut and pasted them into town minutes, and presented them.
And then they were then approved. At a subsequent meeting.
Right.
Now, the exchange between one of the councilmen and the witness, did that exchange basically show that the councilman was upset because this fact that the minutes were false was not disclosed?
I think he was upset, as I read the record, Your Honor, that the Mr. Lindale did not tell him that he represented the, that he was present for the meeting and did not disclose that the minutes were taken by someone else. That's how I read the record. I'm reading it cold because I wasn't the counsel at the hearing. Mr. Rodriguez was the counsel for the time at the termination hearing.
Right.
I'd like to ask you a question about the way the statute's supposed to work. Let's assume hypothetically that before the hearing, before the town council, Mr. Vann took the position that either a majority or all of the members of the town council were biased. What would happen then?
Well, the statute provides us with absolutely no guidance. I think the General Assembly assumed that the remedy for this, the hearing before the elected body, that the remedy of it was going to be at the ballot box. That if the town, if the municipal residents were unhappy with the way their town fathers made decisions, they would replace them.
Well,
but aside from that, there's a possibility, if it's raised timely, of some creative lawyering. Maybe you bring back some prior town council members or create an ad hoc town council. We've done that in other municipalities I represent. When the board is for some reason tainted, we try to create, and it's difficult,
some
an
specially
ad hoc
appointed,
board.
Specially appointed subcommittee.
Specially appointed just for the sole purpose of making this hearing. But in this case, there was no objection raised at any point. If you read the transcript, after the brief couple of questions that Mr. Liguori asked on voir dire of the town council persons, he appears satisfied. He doesn't request recusal. He doesn't say anything after the exchange with Mr. I'll butcher the name. I think it's Ziegenhorn and Mr. Lindell that Justice Ridgely referred to.
Well, the statute is plain, isn't it? It says the hearing's before the council, period.
The elected governing body of the municipality. That's plain, Your Honor.
So where does the authority to construct an alternative remedy come from?
Creative lawyering is my only suggestion, Your Honor. There, in the situation I said, explained, there's no authority to create an ad hoc board of adjustment. We just did it with the consent of the parties.
What was the authority of the Superior Court to create an alternative remedy? I mean, the Superior Court ordered what? A new hearing before some other construct?
Correct.
What's the authority of the court to order
there
that?
There is none. In my view, based on the fact that there was no objection below, the issue of bias wasn't preserved.
Well, what's the practical outcome? Assume there is bias, that there is never a hearing, that there can never be a termination because there can never be an adjudication? Or is it you do the best you can with what you got?
I think in that circumstance, you try to be creative and cobble together what you can and provide a hearing. You know, there's no safety valve as there is under Chapter 92 of Title 11 to construct a board created by the Criminal Justice Council to hear a disciplinary proceeding against an officer. There's no safety valve as in the Department of Education title for creating a hearing officer that may hear the testimony and prepare a report to the board when a teacher is to be fired. Those safety valves were not in place. The General Assembly knew of those safety valves because this police chief's due process statute comes after both of those other statutes, but yet they did not provide for a safety valve.
Mr. Pepper, let's start from the beginning. The if there's a hearing, and the claim is that the town council is biased, there's no alternative under the statute but to go ahead and have the hearing anyway, correct?
Depending on when the issue is raised.
All right, well, let's take a simpler case. Let's assume there's no claim of bias, and the town council has a hearing and votes up or down on whatever the termination issue is. That's the end of the case, correct?
Absent an appeal to the Superior Court on some other issue.
Okay.
But bias would be, in that respect, waived.
Okay. If there is a timely claim of bias and the case goes up to the Superior Court and the Superior Court finds that there is bias, then what? Is the result an outright reversal of the town council's ruling, or is the outcome that the Superior Court then has to try the merits of the claim?
I would think it would be a reversal and a remand for another hearing. And usually by this time you've had an intervening election and you may not have the same players.
Does the rule of necessity have any application here?
Yes, I would think it would. You have a statute that says the hearing is to be conducted before the elected governing body of the municipality. You do what you can to, as this court has done in one of the cases concerning, I think, judicial insurance coverage, a rule of necessity. Somebody has to decide it. But I don't think the Superior Court is going to retry whether there's just cause. That's not what the legislature intended.
Well, shouldn't there at least be some kind of special scrutiny when there's allegations of bias?
If those allegations of bias are made in a timely manner so that you can do something in the court before the town council, either raised before the hearing or an extended voir dire and a request for recusal. But we didn't have that here. We had a voir dire. Mr. Liguori asked two or three questions and appears satisfied.
So basically, your position is this issue was never raised in a timely way. There was no record made before the town council on the issue of bias, one way or the other. And therefore, the issue was never properly before the Supreme Court. I'm sorry, the Superior Court, and the Superior Court had no record on which to find that there was bias. Is that a fair statement of your position?
Almost. I agree with the waiver portion is my position. The record that's created is insufficient to overcome the presumption of honesty and integrity.
Was there a record that even cast that into doubt? Was any record made that would create an issue?
The only record is the limited voir dire. The Cement Institute case before the U.S. Supreme Court from the 40s, I think, is instructive. There, the Federal Trade Commission, the members of the commission, had investigated the Cement Institute and its pricing policies, made a report to Congress, a report to the President, and its members had testified before the congressional committees, and some of them had opined that the pricing system was unlawful. They then come back and conduct a hearing and into the pricing system. It goes up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court rejected the claim of bias and held that the fact that the commission had entertained the notions that the price fixing or the pricing system was illegal did not necessarily mean that the minds of the members were irrevocably closed on the subject. Here, we don't even have that kind of activity by the council. They have agreed that they will decide the case based on the evidence presented before them. They have agreed that they can disagree with the position taken by the mayor and the town manager. They haven't been hooked to a halter and being drug along by the mayor and the town manager.
I'm not sure that we necessarily have to get to this, but assuming for purposes of argument that there was an appropriate record made of bias by the decision makers, Is it your position that someone like the police chief would then have no options available in terms of the ability to have an impartial tribunal hear an appeal? Because clearly it was envisioned that somebody in this position would get such a right, and yet the facts in this hypothetical case would be such that it would be no right at all because there'd be no impartial tribunal to hear his appeal. Is it your position that that's just too bad because there's nothing in the law that provides an alternative?
There are a lot of cases out there that deal with the adjudicator and the decision maker being one and the same person, and there's no finding of a violation of due process. Here
That's not my question. My question is, assume that we have a process that's established that requires or allows an appeal to an impartial tribunal, but that the facts establish that this particular tribunal cannot be impartial. What is your position as to what, if any, relief an aggrieved party has in that circumstance?
I think under the rule of necessity, you probably go with the best hearing you can get, try to eliminate anybody who's clearly biased, and then the Superior Court takes a look at it to see whether the evidence presented to whatever tribunal you have establishes just cause for the termination.
All right, you're into your rebuttal time.
I understand. I'd like to reserve the balance for rebuttal.
May it please the Court, my name is Ben Schwartz. Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely, I'm here today to represent Robin Vann in this appeal. And I'll tell you, this is the first time that I've argued in front of the Supreme Court, so you'll pardon me if I'm a little nervous.
We've all been there.
Thank you.
But before you get started, let me just begin with the question on my mind, which is, why isn't the issue of bias something that's been waived?
Well, the issue of bias comes up in a couple of different ways. Number one, the issue of bias comes up, if you look at the Superior Court's decision, the issue of bias comes up because the people who are on the town council have to continue to work with the mayor and the town manager.
My question is, why hasn't your client waived any claim based upon bias by not raising it?
Because in the middle of the hearing is when we find out that one of the hearing officers feels personally betrayed by the witness. This is the second way in which this bias problem rears its ugly head comes after the hearing is begun in the middle of the hearing.
Why wasn't it raised at that time? The point is that your client went through a hearing process. There was even some obvious concern about whether there'd be an issue of impartiality. So everybody was asked, can you be fair and impartial? Everybody said, yeah. There was no objection, well, wait a second, I don't believe that. And then if something happened in the middle of the hearing that would give rise to a belief that that one or more of the decision makers was not impartial, why isn't something said?
I can only assume that Mr. Liguori, in trying the case, believed that if he had raised the issue, there were no real alternatives because the statute is very specific.
But regardless of what may have been going through an attorney's head, the question for us, or at least one of the questions, is, was there a waiver by failing to raise this issue at an appropriate time? Why is your client and his attorney's silence why is that not a waiver?
It's not a waiver, number one, because my client didn't have any alternatives. He's got a statute that's specific. It says that you can have a hearing, Mr. Van, but your hearing is going to be before the town council. So,
well, for example, you can object to something that's introduced in evidence in a trial. You can get overruled, but at least you've said what you think is necessary to create the issue so that on appeal you can say, well, I tried to keep this out. The trial judge said otherwise, and now I'm complaining that I didn't get a fair trial because
sure.
the evidence was admitted. It's the same kind of thing. There was nothing raised.
I respectfully disagree. It's not the same type of thing because under an evidentiary demand waiver rule, the reason we have the rule is to encourage litigants to raise the issue before the hearing officer, let the trial judge take a shot at getting it right, and then if the trial judge is incorrect and rules incorrectly, causes some prejudice to the litigants' rights, then the reviewing court can fix
example,
the problem.
Well, for example, I assume somebody was in charge of this tribunal, right? Wasn't it the deputy mayor? Or?
Yes.
Okay. If in the middle of the hearing, your client's counsel had said, I've got a concern here that this is not an impartial tribunal that's deciding this matter, and I would ask that a new panel be put in place to hear this. The deputy mayor could have said whatever he wants in response, but at least it's on the table, and arguably there is a solution available.
The next question is, what would the deputy mayor have done if he had in his mind to remedy the problem?
Well, one thing, for example, is the deputy mayor could have spoken to the attorneys on both sides and said, would you both be agreeable to selecting from this group of people or some other method that may not be provided by the statute but would accomplish the result intended by the statute by giving your client an impartial tribunal to hear his case?
That may have happened, I agree. If it had, then this sort of creative lawyering that opposing counsel is talking about, in any if they undertook some effort at creative lawyering to come to some agreement, then the hearing that Robin Van would have gotten would have been a hearing in derogation of the statutory requirement that it be before the town council.
So you're saying that if you were his attorney at the time of the hearing and you were concerned about bias, and the deputy mayor and the opposing counsel said, we agree, you shouldn't have to worry about that. We're going to set up this group. Do you find all these people acceptable and impartial? You're going to say, well, no, I can't find any of them acceptable because it's not what's provided in the statute?
No, I think that if I was Robin Van's attorney at the time, I think that I would have taken a broad look at what was going on. At that time, what was going on was Robin was, for lack of better words, getting the hatchet because he had reported some activity to the Attorney General's office. And in the mind of the town council, the mayor, he needed to go. So I think if I was in Mr. Liguori's position, and with all due respect to Mr. Liguori, I may have applied to the Court of Chancery for an injunction to prevent the town council from trying him before the town council on the notion that the town council wants him gone. How are they going to give him a fair hearing?
With regard to the specific councilman who felt betrayed, if that councilman had stepped aside, how many councilmen would have been remaining on the hearing tribunal?
Your Honor, I don't know.
But at least two, three others, right? Enough to decide the case.
Enough to decide the case.
So why isn't the objection as to that councilman waived? Because there was an alternative. Ask that councilman to step aside because the statutory authority, meaning the council, could still continue to hear the case.
The question is, by failing to object to that specific councilman remaining on the hearing board.
Why isn't that one waived? Because it wasn't made, because there was an alternative. And as I understand the explanation given, The reason there wasn't an objection early on is because of this issue that arose midstream with this one councilman. So wasn't there a remedy then and there that could have been effective? And since it wasn't asked for, it's waived.
I think that a remedy could have been asked for then and there, yes. What would have happened? I don't know. Is there a point to making that objection because the council trying the case feels confident that the vice mayor would have asked that council member to recuse himself? I don't know.
Well,
in other words, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Let's move on for a minute and assume that there's no issue of waiver. There's still a problem, and that is your client took an appeal to the Superior Court and asked the Superior Court to conclude that the town council was biased. Now, for the Superior Court to do that, there has to be some record. What was the factual record that supports what the Superior Court found?
That is a problem, and I think it's a big problem in this case, because the record that you're being asked to look at is the transcript of the hearing. The transcript of the hearing contains a blurb by Robin Vann saying this all came about because I turned in the meeting minutes, or I reported the issue over the meeting minutes to the AG's office, and it contains a blurb by a town councilman saying that he feels personally betrayed by a witness. I think it's a very thin record that this court is being asked to look at, or the Superior Court was asked to look at when it comes to the bias issues.
Well, we actually have an affirmative statement by all members of the council sitting on the tribunal that they have no problem being fair and impartial and deciding this case based solely on the evidence.
Yeah.
And what contradicts that?
What contradicts that in the record are the reference by Robin Vann to the underlying incident of him reporting the town council to the Attorney General's office. And what contradicts that is the town councilman's statement that he feels personally betrayed by one of the witnesses.
But what facts did the Superior Court find that would support its ultimate conclusion of bias? And what in the record supports those facts that were found, if any?
I don't know that the Superior Court made specific factual findings.
It didn't?
No.
It just reached a conclusion.
Reached a conclusion that...
Based on what?
Based on, I can only assume, the facts that we're talking about now.
Well, if we assume that, then those facts have got to be sufficient, under some test, to support the ultimate conclusion that was reached. What argument would you make to that end? How can you construct the argument that the record's sufficient to support conclusion of bias with no fact findings?
Your Honor, my frank appraisal of the matter is that the Superior Court made a decision on what appears to me to be a thin record. There are facts.
Sounds like a non-existent record.
I respectfully disagree.
Then tell me why thin is enough to survive this appeal.
Thin is enough to survive this appeal because, number one, there's an admission in the record. Well, not an admission, but a statement in the record by one of the hearing officers directed to a witness to tell him, I feel personally betrayed that you didn't raise this issue with me.
Well, how does that show bias against your client?
It shows bias. To tie it up, my client's the one who reported to the Attorney General's office. the fact that the meeting minutes concerning the decision to hire Ed Ryan as town manager were doctored. There was never a town meeting where the town council voted, yes, let's hire Ed Ryan. That meeting never happened because at the time, the town council, the town of Cheswold charter said, in order to be hired by the town of Cheswold, you've got to spend a year, after you come off the town council, you've got to spend a year and then you can be hired as an employee. So what happened was Ryan, they wanted to hire Ryan. They doctored the meeting minutes. The mayor directed, I believe, Lindale to doctor the meeting minutes, which he did, and the town council members signed off on it.
So that might be, I mean, what you just recited, or at least the record, might be sufficient to disqualify one of the town council members. How does it disqualify all of them?
They're all in trouble at this point when they're dealing with this issue of getting Robin Vann out. They're all in trouble because at that time, what they did was they went to their local state-level legislators and asked them to do a charter amendment or a charter.
Okay, is this in the record?
This isn't in the record.
Was it found by the court?
This is not facts found by the court. I wish it was, but it's not.
Let me clarify one point you just made. You were explaining that the problem with hiring Ryan was that he could only be hired after he'd been off the council for a year?
I believe so.
In fact, was he hired in under a year?
I believe he was.
So it's not just a question of doctoring the minutes. It's a question of whether his hiring violated the one-year provision.
And it's a question of whether or not council members went to state legislators and had them put in a charter amendment or charter change and never told them the reason we want the charter change is because we already hired Ryan and we're already giving him $70,000 a year. And when the legislators found out that they had been asked to make the charter change, it hit the papers and it was quite a brouhaha.
Well, none of this was even presented to the Superior Court, was it?
This is not...
It was just a brief submitted. There was no oral argument, as I could tell.
Correct.
So you're telling us something...
For the first time
in any court.
Correct.
Well, try and focus on what the record is. Because that's how we have to decide.
Yep.
We have to decide it on the record.
Your Honor, I know that, and I agree. And the record contains a statement by a council member that he felt personally betrayed by the town secretary who was testifying as a witness in Robin Vann's case. That's in the record. His statement's in the record, and the court can go on that. And the court can go on Robin Vann's statement, which is in the record, which is in the transcript of the hearing, where he states that I turned it over to the AG's office. What else was I supposed to do?
All right. Now, you also, is this correct, you also appealed on the ground that there is not substantial evidence to support the conclusions that there was just cause to fire your client?
Well, I don't see it as a separate issue.
But you raised that issue.
The reason I raised the issue...
Well, I'm not asking you why. That issue is raised...
Before the Superior Court, yes.
And the Superior Court has not ruled on that.
Correct.
Okay. So if we decide that there is not a basis for bias in the record, then the matter gets remanded to address the balance of your appeal. Is that right?
If this court determines that there was no basis to believe that there was unconstitutional bias, then I believe the case should be remanded to the Superior Court for determination whether there was sufficient evidence to support the conclusion of the board.
Now, what type of scrutiny should apply when there are allegations of bias like there have been made here? Is it just a regular run-of-the-mill case? You apply the general rule, or you apply something different? What would you like to happen?
I would like plenary review.
So you want de novo review?
De novo review.
Short of that?
You know, quite frankly, I don't know how to answer the question because this state statute doesn't give us a lot to go on.
Sometimes there are no answers.
Sometimes there aren't.
Thank you.
I've got a minute remaining, and if there are no other questions, I don't have any points that I wish to make.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Justice Ridgely, to answer your question, there were five council members who heard the who conducted this hearing. So if one recused himself, there would be four remaining, which would still be a quorum of council.
But all five of them had approved the hiring of Mr. Ryan?
I presume so, Your Honor. That's not in the record, and I don't know that to be able to tell you personally. What happened was the town council got the charter changed, and as I understand it, hired Mr. Ryan in the interim between the passage by both houses of the General Assembly and the signing of the bill by the governor.
But that's not in the record.
No, it's not in the record, but to try to explain the the facts that had been inquired into.
And all of that was history by the time Mr. Vann had his hearing.
I believe so, Your Honor. I think the reason why the record is virtually non-existent on this bias issue is because Mr. Liguori made a tactical decision. He referred to it in his voir dire questions as a witch hunt, and that's how he tried to play it. So I think he made a tactical decision, based on my reading of the record, not to raise these issues, not to go into extended voir dire, not to request the recusal after the little dust-up during the hearing, because he made a tactical decision. He thought he was going to be able to prevail and convince the members of council that it was a witch hunt inspired by the mayor and the town manager. He didn't succeed. Otherwise, there's no reason I can fathom why an experienced counsel like Mr. Liguori, who's done dozens of these hearings, would not make the record that would enable it to be appealed to the Superior Court and then perhaps on to this court. There's no indication in the record that the members of the town council knew that Chief Vann had gone to the Attorney General's office, except when you get to the hearing. And his little blurb in the middle of his testimony, which kind of gets lost in the presentation of facts, but there's no evidence that they had any knowledge prior to that time that the Attorney General's office had done any kind of investigation.
Would you agree that if the decision of the Superior Court were affirmed, it would still have to be remanded, the matter would still have to be remanded for the court to decide, rather if it were reversed, it would have to be remanded for the court to decide whether there was just cause?
Yes, Your Honor, I do agree. And I believe the test would be the typical substantial evidence test.
Well, if there's an issue, a significant issue of bias in the record, is it the same type of review that the Superior Court ought to be using, or should some special standard apply when those allegations are made?
I'm out of time.
Well, you can answer.
Okay. I think you address the issues, if you get by the bias issue and it's found in favor of the town, then I think you apply the typical standard. If there's a bias problem that had been properly raised, then you deal with that. But if you get by that and make a finding that there's no bias or there's not enough evidence in the record to support a claim of bias, and then you get to the test to find whether it was just cause, you apply the substantial evidence test. I'm not aware of any cases that apply any heightened scrutiny. Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement and stand adjourned.
Please rise.